Hey guys, welcome to the WWE Podcast, and this is going to be your official 2020 Money in the Bank preview and prediction show. I've got Zach Smith with you. You guys know him from NXT, reviewing the NXT shows here on the WWE Podcast every single Thursday. So a familiar voice, and we're going to get everything started right after this. Hey guys, not because you need to, but because you would want to, improve your weight room and bedroom performance with the all-new VasoFlux for Men. It's a natural dietary supplement. This unique blend of barks, roots, herbs, and vitamins is nature's way of keeping you in the game, and for under $10, you can order yours today. Just visit Youth Fountain Laboratory at youthfountainlab.com. That's youthfountainlab, all one word, .com, or call 1-800-853-7856. That's 1-800-853-7856.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast, the most passionate and authentic wrestling analysis on the web. We've got you covered with every Raw, SmackDown, and NXT show, giving you a no bullshit opinion. We know you love wrestling. We do too. So let's get this show underway.
And that's the bottom line. What? Because Stone Cold said so.
Hey guys, welcome to the WWE Podcast, and we've got a good show, really good show for you guys as we get ready for Money in the Bank tomorrow night on the WWE Network, or well, whenever you're listening to it. Maybe it's today, maybe it's already happened, but however you're listening, whenever you're listening, thank you for listening as we are very glad you're joining us here to cover the Money in the Bank pay-per-view. Because this is a pay-per-view that I think, and my hosts, co-hosts think, could be a very underrated pay-per-view with a lot of the matches happening. Some of them seem like locks, but are they really? Right? I mean, are they really? And we get into that. The possibilities. Say, for example, Braun Strowman joining Bray Wyatt. Is that actually possible? We get into that. And of course, the heavy favorites for both the men's and women's Money in the Bank ladder match. We discuss whether or not they're actually favorites. Could there be an outlier of who could win that match? And Zach and I cover that in depth. So you guys will enjoy this show. If you guys have listened to this show before, you've listened to our NXT review, you know and have heard Zach before. And I think that you'll enjoy him here as we don't agree on everything. And that's what's great. We can't have people always agree with everything. It doesn't create for a very interesting show. And that's what Zach brings to the table here. And so you guys probably famously know from our sparring session over the Bray Wyatt Firefly Funhouse that I was basically in a handicap match with in the WrestleMania review with him and Mary against myself. I don't know if I really could claim victory there, but I certainly kicked out of a few finishers that they were able to hit me with. And I think they hit me with a few finishers. I kicked out, but then I went up the ramp and went backstage. I think that's probably the equivalent of what happened in that debate. It was a pretty hot and heavy, but that was several weeks ago, if you're interested to hear that WrestleMania review. Okay, well, guys, thank you once again for joining me on this show. We are here 7 times a week with 7 different shows, including some quick hits that I'll be doing in the near future, maybe even tomorrow night after the Money in the Bank pay-per-view goes off the air. We'll see. You can also follow me on Twitter during the show at the WWE Podcast for my in-time and real-time thoughts on some of the things going on. So hit me up on Twitter. You can also send me a voice message on realwwepodcast@gmail.com if you want to get your audio question, comment, concern, whatever, to me at therealwwepodcast@gmail.com email address, and I will get you on the show. So you can also, if you want ad-free, many people don't like ads, I get it, head on over to patreon.com/WWEpodcast, and the entire library is ad-free. So how about that? But anyway, I hope everyone's doing well. I know things are crazy right now and continue to get crazier, and we hear lockdown end dates, and then those dates get pushed back, but the then they reopen, but they're not really reopen. And it's just bizarre, right? And this whole world we're living in is just crazy right now. But hey, we're here for you to escape from that. And so is Money in the Bank. So let's get into it. I'm not going to waste any more time. Let's get into Zach and myself as we discuss the Money in the Bank pay-per-view and give our preview predictions. And of course, talk a little bit on the front end of some other stuff going on, including Orton and Edge, that program being renewed, among some other things. So yeah, it's Money in the Bank preview and prediction, but you guys know the show. If you listen, you know that we go on tangents and talk about other things. That's just the way it is. So here we go. Let's get to the preview and prediction show with Zach. I'll be back on Tuesday with your Raw review and your full Money in the Bank review. So get ready for that. That's going to be a big show Tuesday. And in between, probably quick hits. So lots of audio coming your way. Thanks, guys. I'll talk to you soon. All right, guys, welcome to your official 2020 Money in the Bank preview and prediction show. And today, really tonight, as we record this, I've got a host with me. You guys may recognize his voice. He is the NXT reviewer on the WWE podcast. It's Zach Smith. Zach, it's great to have you here. Thank you so much for joining me tonight to discuss Money in the Bank.
Thank you very much for having me, Matt. Sorry in advance, ladies and gentlemen, you can't get away from me. I'm everywhere you listen to. It's good to be back. I'm really excited.
Yes, you cannot escape. For those that are just like, ah. Although, to be fair, I have not heard any of that feedback. So if those are people that are out there, I haven't heard from them. So that's a good thing. So maybe you're quietly angry right now. Who knows? Zach, thanks for joining me. It's great to have you here. As I said off the air, you know, we're in roughly week seven, depending on where you are in the United States of our lockdown journey that we're all on together, as millions of people are starting to lose their minds. And I hope everything's going good in Florida. You mentioned that, you know, beaches are starting to open, which is great. And are you adjusting to this whole new life that you have now?
I definitely didn't have a choice to adjust. I feel like it helped because, and I mentioned on the show that I did last time, that I work at a grocery store. So I am a quote unquote essential worker. So work didn't slow down for us at all. As a point of fact, you know, it got busier, not only because people were buying toilet paper and soap and things like that, but because if you can't go anywhere, a lot of people were just going to hang out at the grocery store. And so it's helped me kind of adjust. And like, my wife works a couple days from home now and then goes into work. It's definitely been a weird adjustment. I've always been a homebody anyway, but as soon as you now can't go anywhere, and when you do, you're kind of scared of somebody not wearing a mask or like somebody being sick, they don't know about it. It's been a weird adjustment period, but as far as work goes, I mean, it's been about the same, just a lot more masks.
Yeah, that's fine. I did forget that. Yeah, you're in a grocery store. So for you, like you said, it's just more masks. You have your wife home a couple of days a week, and it's become a social gathering for people at grocery stores. Like you said, it's one of the few things that are open. And and I actually, just before I started this show, I just came from the grocery store. I had to pick up a few things. And you look at that person that doesn't – there was like one person in the store that didn't have a mask. And you're looking at them and you're like, you a-hole. Like, you just look at him. You know what I mean? Like, you are – what, you know, what is wrong with you, you know? And it's – it's required as you go in the store. It says like on the store, you have to have a mask to come in. And it's crazy. Like, there's arrows in the aisles. You can only go certain ways and walk certain directions insane. In the aisles. And the self-checkouts, like, you know, a full aisle deep of people just to pick up stuff. It's nuts. I mean, so, well, I mean, for you, you're one of the very few people that don't have a new normal. It's just I guess it's normal, but just more, like you said, masks in your wife's home. But so let's get into wrestling, because that's why people are here. They're here to listen to us discuss Money in the Bank, because that is coming to us tomorrow night on the WWE Network. And don't forget, guys, it's Mother's Day tomorrow, FYI. For those that you may have forgotten, go pick up your damn flowers or cards
or
whatever.
Don't forget.
Yeah. Uh-uh. Why do you think I was just there? So go and don't forget about that. But after you do that and you have dinner with mom, if you can, maybe virtually, or if you want to take a chance, you can go to mom's house or she can come to yours. Don't forget, obviously, Money in the Bank tomorrow night, but let's start getting into what's going on in WWE right now. We'll get to the preview in just a second, but Zach, I guess before I give you any talking points, how are you enjoying WWE as a whole right now? I mean, NXT excluded, because that's a different topic, but just the main product, SmackDown and Raw rosters. Are you starting to adjust to this no audience live thing? Are you, does it rear its ugly head at times, and other times you forget? I mean, so, and beyond that, are you enjoying the storylines that are going on?
It's interesting because, you know, I've done the NXT show for about 6 weeks now, give or take. And when you asked me originally if I would step in, I was ecstatic because NXT is legitimately my favorite wrestling show right now, NXT and AEW. And so those, I feel like, haven't been as affected. When I watch Raw and SmackDown, I don't know if it's because I'm used to Raw and SmackDown being bigger or what it is, but it's still so weird to watch wrestling without any kind of crowd. I mean, at least AEW had some wrestlers and staff in the audience, so you hear something. It's very weird to see, like, Drew McIntyre come out the day after WrestleMania as the new WWE champion, and it's crickets. You're trained as a wrestling fan that if there's no reaction, it's either not working or it's not a big deal, and that's been everything on the show. I've been adjusting to Liv Morgan making the most of it, Zelina Vega making the absolute most of it. I've gotten used to that part, but I don't think I'm ever going to get used to wrestling without a crowd. Like, that's it just feels wrong and feels like never what we were supposed to do. I don't know that I'm ever going to adjust to it.
Yeah, the audience, you could argue, is the biggest character on the show. I mean,
100%.
It's like taking the soul out of the show. And as much as you try to ignore it at times, and there are moments that you forget, or you know, even large chunks of moments where you're just like, oh, you know, it's not so bad because the promo's been that good that, you know, you don't need to necessarily look for that audience reaction. You can just kind of feed on your own emotions. But the large majority, I would say, it's been a glaring hole, and they've done their best that they can. AEW, to their credit, I think, have kind of, I think, created a better presentation, because 100%. They do have at least some bodies in the audience to make noise. And when there's nothing, and you can hear Michael Cole through the camera at the desk, it's just – because then you know that the wrestlers are hearing it. It's just weird.
It's super weird.
It's so weird. I've heard calls made. I mean, it's just
– yeah.
It's just – it's tough. But I mean, I'm not blaming anybody. I'm not – you know, this is obviously at the fault of nobody. But there are – the majority of the time, it is not a great look. It's hard to watch at times. But I think they're doing the best that they can. And like you said, we are used to that instant reaction. Like you said, Drew McIntyre, man, he is being robbed. Edge, what a year to come back and get – oh, my – totally robbed. Blind.
Welcome back, buddy.
Oh, it's rough. And then they're apparently continuing that. And that'll be my next question to you. But that the whole Tamina thing, or not Tamina thing, but the whole non-reaction thing, I was going to say Tamina's probably not noticing any difference. I mean, like, she's coming out and she's like, well, this is about right. I mean, like,
music to her ears.
Yeah. She's like, I don't know what you're talking about, guys. Everything sounds normal to me. But this is an unprecedented time. I don't know how much longer we're going to be. There's rumors of Florida, like, doing a 25% allowance for fans if they still social distance. But that, I don't know. I mean, you live there. Have you heard anything regarding maybe loosening a, you know, sports venue, even in a very limited capacity?
Yeah. A lot of times you'll hear people make jokes about Florida and people from Florida. And just to be clear up top, all those are true. We're all insane. This is an insane place. This is place that made that donation, and then all of a sudden they're an essential service. And yeah, there have been rumors going around that they're looking for ways to start opening things back up and still be quote unquote safe. So we were talking about it before the show, where they're opening some of the beaches, but you can't sit on the beach, but you can run or walk on the beach as long as you're moving. They're definitely making a slow roll to try and open more things up, as you know, media wise and everything. It hasn't been as bad as, say, you guys up in New York, but there have been rumors that they're looking to open up some venues for essential businesses, which WWE would fall under. And my understanding is, basically, for the shows, you can have I believe it would still have to be in Florida, but you could have it at 25% capacity for whatever building, because then you have enough room to space everybody out. So kind of the same thing AEW is doing, where there's wrestlers, but they're spaced out, but they would let some fans in. And it definitely seems like the people with money and interest in this happening, Vince McMahon included, are going to push to make that happen in some capacity. I would definitely prefer it over, you know, no fans, and you're going to have those fans sign waivers. And I know that's why AEW was talking about their event at Daly's Place, and they might be running more there. It's insane. But yeah, I mean, everything that I've heard is that they're slowly trying to open it up, but they can't just allow, you know, 10,000 people into a venue packed. You'd have to do it that way.
Well, that's okay. Good. I mean, I don't think you guys are insane. Like, I almost moved there. I love that place, Florida. I mean, you got
me too.
I love Florida.
I love Florida. Yeah.
Oh, it's too hot. I'm like, I'd rather deal with hot than having to scrape off my car 9 out of 10 days.
You're jealous of me every time we start a call. You start angry at me.
It's just because I have spent a lot of vacations there, and I get it. And I said, I mean, I live in New York. We get about 2 months of summer, and then it's back to the leaves changing, and then you're back in the winter. So I appreciate all the warm days we get up here. And we, like I said, it snowed today and it's freaking May 9th. So it's just absolutely insane. So
you being mad at New York weather and being a little bit mad at me for Florida weather is maybe my favorite part of this podcast.
Well, you'll get it every time. Don't worry. You could make a case either way about, oh, they should open, they shouldn't. The fact is, if you're going to still mandate social distancing, you can do it with 25% capacity. There's enough space, as you said. The only thing is, which is maybe something that WWE is thinking or not thinking about, but they should be, if they can do this, and if they decide to go this road, the fact that you're running a live television program with a quarter of the fans that are normally there, it's a good thing because you have noise. But with only 25% of the people there, people that shout things that you may not want on a live feed are much more pronounced than if you had a full building and they're more muted by just regular noise going on. And so you got to be very weary of the fans there that want to scream maybe profanities or take advantage of the fact that their voice is much more of has a much more carrying distance than it normally would. So that's the other thing you got to think about from WWE's perspective. So hopefully, I mean, I don't know, in the next month or two, we get something. I would hope by SummerSlam, there's at least a partial capacity of some sort.
Yeah, SummerSlam, they're definitely going to try and work it out, you know, from whatever. They're definitely trying to work something out by SummerSlam, because the whole marketing of SummerSlam is always the biggest party of the summer. And that's going to look super lame if they're not even have anybody there, because they haven't changed any of the sets. They haven't made it look any different. So you have to at least have some people there to have something.
Exactly. That'd be really funny if they call it the biggest party of the summer. I mean, what a play on words, and that would be brutal to call it that. They're trying everything they can. It's the WrestleMania too big for one night. This is the most unique Money in the Bank ladder match. Always got to have something to try to make what the situation is like they're owning it. And, so one other thing, and then maybe you can jump in with anything else that's not Money in the Bank related, but the Orton Edge program, from the promos we saw on Raw and SmackDown, does not appear to be over. We have a promo, very, very brief, maybe like 30 seconds, but basically saying that Edge is going to hunt down Randy Orton on Raw. Didn't get any more than that. So this program clearly is continuing. Are you surprised by that? Are you looking forward to it? I don't know what more they can do, but I mean, just give me your thoughts on it.
It's weird because on one hand, Randy Orton and Edge was a great a great buildup, and obviously Edge coming back as a babyface, and Randy Orton was the perfect heel with all the history they had together and everything that Randy can do in a feud if he actually cares. And then the match happened. You, myself, and Mary talked about it. It was simply too long of a match. It was the thing Triple H usually does at WrestleMania, which is, I'm going to give myself 20, 25, 30, and it didn't need to be. The weird thing is that, number one, traditional wrestling logic dictates that if a babyface wins the first match in a feud, that feud is over. If the heel wins, then the babyface has something to come back from. Or if the babyface wins the first match, usually the reason that you would have another match is the heel initiates it. So Randy Orton would do something else. He already attacked Beth Phoenix, so I don't know what he would do. Break into Edge's house. He's done that. But it's weird to me that Edge, in storyline as a character, came back, had a beef with Randy Orton, had this match at WrestleMania, whooped him up and down the Performance Center, and then decided, you know, a few weeks later, I'm going to come back on Raw and hunt him again. I guess from a character standpoint, it could be an I'm not done with you thing yet, but you already did a Last Man Standing match. Where are we going from here?
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, like, you started at 100 miles an hour doing the Last Man Standing. You know, as you said, typical wrestling logic would say singles match, then maybe a cage, then you go to a Hell in a Cell. I mean, it doesn't always have to be in that order. Of course, you can mix and match the match types. But usually, yeah, you start at point A, go to point B and point C. Now, with Randy Orton and Edge, you had to go 0 to 100 because it was building to WrestleMania. You couldn't make that a non-no DQ match, a straight-up wrestling match, like they did with Randy Orton and Triple H 10 years ago. And when Triple H broke into his house and, you know, threw him through his own living room window, and it was just a straight-up singles match at WrestleMania. I'm like, why? Crazy. Why put handcuffs on yourself doing that? So they couldn't do that. They did the right thing in making it a Last Man Standing. Just the biggest culprit here, the biggest heel, is the coronavirus taking away the audience. Because we wouldn't have got a backstage marathon of just beating each other with inanimate objects. It would have been, I think, a classic. And both men got robbed for all of the amazing build that they did for weeks and weeks and weeks. It was the best thing on Raw. We couldn't wait for Mania. They both got robbed. So now, like you said, we're moving on. We go on to Money in the Bank. And we go past it now because this is obviously going to be a post-Money in the Bank program that they start and probably go to SummerSlam, I would think, because I don't even know what the pay-per-view in June is. I think it's to be – it says to be determined. So I don't even know what the June pay-per-view is. So the logic would say SummerSlam. But as you said, why is Randy going after – or I'm sorry, why is Edge going after Randy? That's how it was presented to us. Why is what does Edge have left to do? I mean, he already did exactly what everyone wanted to see him do. So I don't know how or why they positioned it that way. We'll see. It's just very strange. It's not logical from, like you said, face and heel type of dynamic. It's like, well, you did what you did. We all were happy with how it ended. Unless there's fans in the audience, I mean, what more can you do? I don't know how they ratchet this up more. Do they do it? I mean, I guess I don't know if a cage match is more. That's kind of a lateral. I don't know. I don't know what they do. I really don't. Do you have any idea what match they could go for next? Clearly, they're building to one.
Clearly, they are. And what you can't do is have a singles match now. So you would either have to do a cage. I would have said Hell in a Cell, except they have that as a pay-per-view, and they use it very sparingly. So maybe they can use a Hell in a Cell. Unless they're going to do an Edge, I'm not done with you yet street fight, I want to beat you more, it would either have to be something like that. There's no reason to do a steel cage. There's been no outside interference. So it would have to be something like a Hell in a Cell or just a no DQ or something like, because what you can't do is it just be a singles match now, because now the stakes are lower. So I would assume it's going to be no DQ or Hell in a Cell, I think, would be good for the build that they've had, but I don't think WWE is going to want to construct a Hell in a Cell with everybody that's required for that right now, and they have their own pay-per-view for it.
Probably not, and this is the, again, the downfall of having just Hell in a Cell built into the schedule, which I've ranted on many times. It makes no sense. No sense at all, and it waters down the whole concept. But this would be a perfect program for it, would be Hell in a Cell. This is so deserving of it. But, I mean, if they don't have it in a true arena, I don't know if it physically would fit safely into the Performance Center. I mean, that thing is
good point. I didn't
pretty
think
damn
about
big.
That.
Yeah,
right.
So,
that's a good point. I forgot how big a Hell in a Cell is.
It's big.
Well, what the hell do you do then?
I don't know. I mean, unless they're really rolling the dice that they think they'll be in an arena by August. I don't know.
That's a big role, man.
So maybe they just don't specify. They just kind of go, we'll have something in mind. We'll have, you know, we'll do something. If it's Hell in a Cell, and we'll know that a few weeks out, we'll build to it. So I think that they don't know. So yeah, to me, Hell in a Cell, but you can't do it in the Performance Center. I don't think physically you can. Maybe I haven't measured the height and width of the Performance Center ringside area to determine that. But I think it would be pretty hilarious to see a massive Hell in a Cell in such a small arena. But I don't know. We're probably talking about something they're not even going to do because Hell in a Cell is part of the pay-per-view schedule anyway. But it's just, again, when I saw the promo, I'm like, what? You know, usually they should have, if they had flipped the script and said Randy's going to hunt down Edge, okay. I mean, that would make more sense because Randy's looking for retribution after what happened to him at WrestleMania. So, I don't know. I don't know what to make of it. I'm looking forward to it because these two work so well off each other. It's just a little weird. So, I don't know. But
it's the equivalent of you and I getting in a fight on this podcast and I get the better of you in an argument. Just, you know, grab something out of the air, Bray Wyatt, you know, the Fiend at WrestleMania. If I just, you know, embarrass you on a podcast and then we hang up and then I go on Twitter and say, I'm not done with Matt yet. And then we get on another call. Why is it my initiative as the person who won or Edge won to go back for another match? If you were going to do that, it feels like you could have just had a singles match at WrestleMania. It still would have been Edge returning, still would have been a great build, and then you can do the last man standing at the next pay-per-view, whatever, SummerSlam. But it feels weird that Edge is the one that's like, I'm coming back and it's Randy again.
You're listening to the WWE Podcast. We'll be right back after this short break.
Hey guys. Not because you need to, but because you would want to. Improve your weight room and bedroom performance with the all-new VasoFlux for Men. It's a natural dietary supplement. This unique blend of barks, roots, herbs, and vitamins is nature's way of keeping you in the game. And for under $10, you can order yours today. Just visit Youth Fountain Laboratory at youthfountainlab.com. That's youthfountainlab, all one word, .com. Or call 1-800-853-7856. That's 1-800-853-7856.
Welcome back to the WWE Podcast. Let's get back to more great wrestling audio.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they didn't even mean it like that. They're just trying to hype something to hype something. And maybe it is Randy that comes out. Maybe we're reading too much into the line that he's going to hunt down Randy. Maybe they don't follow that script. And it is Randy coming out and going, Edge, you know, what happened at WrestleMania? I'm not going to forget it. I mean, something like that. You
it does sound like a Vince line. Yeah. He's going to hunt down Randy Orton. It sounds like a Vince line.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to downplay it. I'm looking forward to it, I guess. Yeah. I just don't, for God's sakes, don't need them in a backstage brawl ever again. Ever. Ever. I mean, man, what a flop for Edge's return. And we all love Edge. I think we all do. I had like chills in my body when he returned at the Rumble. It was one of the best moments I've seen in maybe 10 years.
Absolutely.
It was amazing. And then you get that. And it's, man. I don't know. So, all right. Before we get to Money in the Bank, anything else that just kind of a high level that you wanted to touch on that maybe we won't during the Money in the Bank preview?
I don't think so. Cause it was funny because the only thing really going around the news, you know, was the stuff with Roman and Vince that I touched on in, at the beginning of the NXT show I did just a couple days ago. That's really been what's kind of taken over the news. And then as far as Money in the Bank itself goes, it's interesting to me that, you know, we just had our last couple people, AJ and Otis, qualify for the match. And I think WWE is going to have to adjust the way that they usually do things, because a lot of times you'll have things like this happen where, let's say, Otis gets added to the Money in the Bank on the Friday before the pay-per-view. that works if you're going to do the pay-per-view on Sunday, but I always think about it in terms of they've already filmed it. So what happens if Otis gets hurt in the match on Friday and is very clearly hurt? Like, I feel like WWE is definitely going to have to adjust the way they do this, because I feel like wrestling's not ballet and something could happen. Or if they have, if they test positive for COVID on the day of and now, you know, couldn't be in the match, but they're on TV. It's a weird kind of jumbled situation we're in.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm totally with you. I don't know what, and again, the ending to SmackDown, I just want to touch on. You know what? SmackDown had its high points, and this isn't a SmackDown review show, but when WWE has the wrestlers at the end of the show fighting over something that's not even real, like they're going up to the briefcase, fighting over a ladder to go up to a basically a meaningless briefcase to what? Have a symbolic moment that or get in the heads of their opponents that this is what I'm going to do tomorrow in 2 days. Like, I don't get that. I'm not following how a ladder is suddenly incapable of holding Otis, right? Apparently he is stronger than steel, right? I mean, you have to be kidding me. The average ladder, I looked it up. The average ladder, because I wanted to know, because I'm thinking Otis is what? They bill him at 275, right?
I think so,
275.
Yeah.
So the average industrial step ladder can hold 375 pounds, right? So you have to be – Otis was the only one on the ladder, and this is a total capacity. So you have to be kidding me that Otis takes one step. So basically half of his weight gets put on there, and then the ladder, both of those rungs snap. I mean, so if they're going to play that up and he's suddenly too big to climb up the ladder, it's just nonsense. Why are they even playing that up? Vince McMahon saw this guy – and goes, oh, he's got to wear tank tops. It's going to be hilarious with that his belly hanging out every week. He's got him eating cheese, or he's got to eat. I remember for weeks playing him off like he's a fat buffoon that is good in the ring. He's got, you know, he's got that charisma, but he'll never be a top guy. He's kind of a comedian, and he's proven obviously to be more than that. But you can see exactly how Vince sees him, and it's a damn shame. Look at Yokozuna, right? I mean, look at Yokozuna. Look at the Big Show. Did anybody ever talk about Vince McMahon framed Big Show in a way that was like, oh, he's big and fat? No, they didn't.
No.
You know, so I don't know. I mean, I'm tired of the weight issue being put around Otis. I'm just tired of it.
It's super weird. And for the record, this man researched industrial ladder weights for you guys.
I'm serious.
He didn't even know if he was going to be able to bring that up today, and he did that for you, and that's why he has his own podcast network, right? That's why he hires people like me, because he's doing research over here.
Damn right. You're damn right. I looked this stuff up because
you
look
at this
up
anywhere else. Where do you get this?
Never. No, see?
And it's funny to me that they portrayed him as just this big old, because you're right, with Yokozuna and the Big Show, they were always presented – well, in Yokozuna's case, he was presented very seriously. When he tagged with Owen Hart, there was some comedic stuff in there, but he was still a serious character. For most of Big Show's run, he's been a serious character. We joke about him flip-flopping from heel to face, but he's generally presented as an attraction that they overused. And the interesting thing there is Yokozuna and Big Show are two guys that did have huge weight problems. And it's interesting to me that they get these big guys – and then, like in Yokozuna or Big Show's case, at some point they decide, oh, these fat guys are too fat. So they take them to weight loss centers and things like that. But what they never did, what they never ever did, was mention it on television or try and make it a story. And what they never did, even with the Big Show, to the best of my recollection, is show him putting one foot on a ladder and breaking it. Because I'll tell you why they did it, Matt. And this is why I'm here. It's – I'm sorry, Mary. Conspiracy Zach. There's two reasons. One is because there's two times they do this, WrestleMania and Money in the Bank. At WrestleMania, everybody has to find a reason to point at the sign no matter what. It's just in case you forgot, it's WrestleMania. I could understand how it's easy to forget a 26-foot sign in the air. They have to point at it. At Money in the Bank, What they do is they hang the briefcase up top with nothing in it, and 100%, at least one, if not in some cases, all six participants or five participants or seven participants are going to get on ladders in the middle of the ring and cut promos on each other so that you get that visual of somebody on top of the ladder at Money in the Bank. I will bet you money that it's because Vince thinks that it makes fans think that somebody could win, because now you can picture them getting the briefcase because they actually lifted it. Matt, the other reason they did it is because Otis is going to have a special ladder like Stardust did at the WrestleMania Money in the Bank. Remember when he pulled out the bedazzled ladder?
Yep.
If you don't think Otis is going to have a stakes and weights ladder under that ring, you've never watched wrestling.
Yeah. No, you're right. You are. I was thinking that same thing. I'm glad you mentioned that, because I think that's exactly where they're going to go. Otherwise, why tell that story? I mean,
there's no reason, because if he climbs a normal ladder now, then there was no point. Mm-hmm. If he just breaks the ladder and he can't get up it, there's still no point. If he has his own special ladder, that's different.
Yep. Yep. And that's exactly what it's going to be. Mm-hmm. Some kind of reinforced, I don't know, you know, stakes and weights, like you said, ladder. And Corey Graves is going to lose his mind. Or maybe Mandy Rose helps him out. I don't know. Because if the ladder matches are happening simultaneously, then Mandy Rose, you would think, and Otis have to have some kind of interaction.
Right.
And so, yeah, you're probably right. And don't forget, also, the other fact, every single ladder match that happens ever in professional wrestling, at least in the WWE world, that as great as these athletes are, they can do 450 splashes, they can do 18 suicide dives. Here's what they're going to forget how to do, and that's put one foot in front of the other. Because they can't climb a ladder quickly, right? I mean, they're all in mud. They cannot climb a ladder quickly. And I get it's to add to the drama, and I'm fine with suspending the disbelief on it. I've just kind of been like, throw up my arms. It's not, to me, as bad or egregious as a cage match that you can win by running away from your opponent and running out the door. That's how you win. Like, to me, that is a bigger offense of disbelief and really an insult to professional wrestling than is the ladder match. Because, fine, they're tired. They just can't climb. But then the next move they do is, you know, a moonsault off the ladder, right? So, whatever. So let's get into it, though, because we're already talking about the ladder matches here. So. Yep. Let's get into it, and I'll start at the bottom here. I'll start at the SmackDown Tag Team Championship Fatal 4-Way. New Day versus The Miz versus The Miz and John Morrison versus the Forgotten Sons and Lucha House Party, newly on the main event scene. Boy, you know the tag team division's getting thin. I'm going to toss this to you, Zach. Any idea who could win this?
So it feels like there's only two teams that could win. Feels like New Day could win and retain because it's the New Day. And frankly, I love New Day. I'm never going to be mad at them winning. Also feels like we've been pushing forward the Forgotten Sons. Now, obviously, Lucha House Party was added because, one, they're just added and they don't have any tag teams. Boy, it sure is a shame there's not a tag team that just got their release that could have been really great in this spot if they just used them as a tag team or something. But there's nobody like that. So Lucha House Party's added because they're going to add a lot of excitement to it. They're going to add a lot of aerial stuff to it. Miz and Morrison just lost the titles. I don't see the point in flip-flopping it back and forth, but as I say that, it's WWE, so that's probably the most likely outcome. My initial thought was that the Forgotten Sons were going to win, because it feels like they want to do something with the Forgotten Sons, and they haven't figured out what to do yet. So I'm torn between the Forgotten Sons winning it, which I think might be the right move. This is one of those things you can only do when there's not a crowd. We don't talk a lot about the fact that there are advantages as well, because not once since they formed have the Forgotten Sons gotten any kind of reaction from any kind of crowd ever. It's not – I don't think it's their fault. I think it's – the fact that they're just dudes from Sons of Anarchy coming into the ring and they're not that exciting. So if you're going to put the titles on somebody that you don't think would get that reaction, this would be the time to do it. So I'm torn between them and the New Day. That being said, the last time, Matt, you and I did this was for the Saudi show, and we both laughed and said, there's no way Goldberg's going to win. So, like, what the hell do we know, you know?
Well, that's just it, right? I mean, yeah, you bring up our Goldberg deal and how he could never win and look what happened. But yeah, the Sons of Anarchy is a pretty good analogy when it comes to these guys. We don't know a whole lot about them, but to your point, WWE is really just able to do whatever they want without repercussion from the fans, or booing when they're supposed to cheer, or cheer when they're supposed to do to boo, and all that nonsensical crap that they like to spew on us. And really, the only backlash is on social media, which is that really a great gauge at times? Maybe not. Like, social media can be very toxic. We know that, and people just pile on. So who knows if social media would be true to life in terms of a crowd reaction. So they could just do what they want. There is no better time to do that than do it now. But with the ratings really starting to tank, I mean, I don't know if people would be turned off by this. If this isn't really a needle mover either way, but this may just kind of be another straw in the terrible drink that some people may view. Some, I don't, but some people may view that is the WWE product right now. Mm-hmm. So I guess to give my pick, this is not easy. I don't think Lucha House Party, although this is the first time I can ever say that there is the biggest chance of Lucha House Party winning in their entire careers, and it would certainly shake things up. I don't think it's ready for the Forgotten Sons, but like you said, they have been on a winning streak as of late since their debut, which is what you do just strategically. Pro Wrestling 101, when they debut, they just win. I mean, that's just what happens. Yep. New Day, I'm a little bit neutral on New Day. I don't hate them. I don't love them. I'm just kind of like, like, it's New Day. The Miz and John Morrison, I don't think need it at this point. I wouldn't even have taken it off them since, you know, prior to WrestleMania, but that's another story. I mean, I think I'm gonna go crazy here. I'm gonna go really crazy. I'm gonna say Lucha House Party wins, and because, like, for the same reason that the Forgotten Sons could win. This is basically a house money, take your best chance, and let's see if something sticks with no repercussions, no consequences other than social media of people getting angry that the Lucha House Party won. The Lucha House Party have been a total joke for many, many, many months. And for them to just burst on the scene, what, last week, and get a victory over New Day, that was a big deal. And so I think Lucha House Party wins this. I wouldn't put money on it, but Lucha House Party wins. I think it'd be a nice change of pace.
I think it would be a good change of pace. I think it would be – they're definitely the least likely team to win of the four, and so I think it would be the most surprising thing that they would do. And really the only reason that the Forgotten Sons are my pick is because I bet you Vince really likes Jackson Ryker, and – I'm trying to think like him a little bit in that pick. So we've successfully picked the two least likely teams, which means one of us is absolutely going to be right.
I think you're right. Yes. Yes. I mean, there is really nothing to lose here. No. Nothing. Nobody. I mean, I'm sorry. I don't think most people care about the New Day being tag team champions at this point. New Day.
Sure.
They've been so over for so long that them holding the belts doesn't mean a whole lot anymore, other than them just having Big E have to change the number during his intro of, you know, their 8-time, 9-time, whatever tag team champions. I think it would be. The only thing I would say is I think Lucha House Party is a little more exciting than the Forgotten Sons are right now. Yes. It would go from babyface to babyface, but it would still be an exciting win and people going, what? The Lucha House Party? Mm-hmm. For, you know, if you put it on the Forgotten Sons, people are going to say, who? Rather than, oh my God, they got the belts? And so I think Lucha House Party, people have just kind of poo-pooed and said that they're just nothing more than a joke of a tag team and basically a glorified Mexicools group. And so Lucha House Party, to me, I'm on board for it. But the key is, after that, I would like a little bit of a promo, right? Give us promos from them. Don't just put it on them and give us nothing. I need substance after the win. But again, I'm getting two steps ahead of myself, so we'll see.
Yeah, definitely, if they do win, I think it'll be a cool moment. But we definitely need to hear from them and know them better. The only reason that they've been a joke is because they've literally put no effort into you getting to know them. It's the same reason you don't care about the Forgotten Sons. It's the reason you do care a bit about Miz and Morrison because you know both of them. And it's the reason you definitely care about the New Day. It's not necessarily the performers. It's the time that you put into them. And if you put it on Lucha House Party, I've always liked them a lot. I've always thought that they could be in more serious situation than they are. And if you want to do that, this is your chance. I know that Vince doesn't care about tag team wrestling, but you still have to have some. And if you're going to have them, you might as well do something with them. And this is a chance to do it.
I think you said it. Yeah, this is the opportunity. If you're going to make it on, put it on somebody different and new and do it with the team that people at least know who they are,
right?
And have to just redefine somebody they already know, but they know are really good in the ring. And it's that Lucha Libre style that people, I think, are very, I think, open to, especially in today's style of pro wrestling. So, all right. Well, you got the Forgotten Sons. I have Lucha House Party. I hope one of us are right, because I don't need to see New Day's champion. Miz and Morrison got really flat really quick after losing it. So, I hope one of us are right. Okay. Yep. SmackDown Women's Championship, Bayley versus Tamina. Again, I'll let you go first on this one.
Thanks so much. excuse me. I mean, Bayley. I mean, this is one of those, it's the same thing. They've never put anything into Tamina. She's always been the bodyguard for somebody or the strong silent type. She's always been put into stupid stories. She's always been put with Nia Jax, who's my least favorite wrestler. So she got some of that by osmosis. What she's doing now is the best stuff that she's done, because she's actually gotten a chance to show personality. And the funny thing is, she hasn't really gotten to show a ton of it on television. It's been on social media where she's going through it. We'll talk about Lacey Evans later. She's gotten a chance to do it too. But Tamina's really had a chance to show that she actually does have a personality and can use it, and has put herself on a higher peg. But there's no way she's going to be women's champion. It seems clear to me, at least, that she's put in there as a wrench between Bayley and Sasha. Those times that Tamina super kicks Bayley, but Sasha just stands there and stares at her, there's dissent between them. It seems like we're telling a longer term story between Bayley and Sasha, and Tamina is one of the steps in that. I see no universe in which Bayley doesn't walk out of here as women's champion.
I'm with you. This one is just a lock on so many levels, and I hate to say that, because sometimes I say that's a lock, and you know, look what happens with, like you said, with Goldberg, right? I said that no way Goldberg wins, and on a much different level, of course, but it happens in matches like these that look so obvious. You know, you would think that maybe Vince would pull one over on you, but I don't think this is the case here. This would make next to no sense for to have Tamina win. I think the story here will be Bayley cheating to win, but it's going to be, like you said, she is going to be that next divider for Bayley and Sasha to get them to that next step that we all know is ultimately going to be Bayley versus Sasha for the women's championship. And I'm fine. I'm on board with it. I've just kind of really just let myself go with the fact that their whole story of Bayley and Sasha is the most convoluted mess that I've ever, if anyone ever was to seriously go back and just plot it on like a graph or bullet point it from, or a flow chart, I'd love to see a flow chart on this of their story. It would be the most, just, it would be a big disaster. So I've just kind of absolved myself of that thinking and just go, okay, this is a clean slate. They both returned as heels. They've done a decent job. Bayley's starting to come into her own. We're starting to see some divisiveness, and I think Tamina could be that next step for these two in whatever fashion. I haven't really thought of that level of detail, but no way Tamina wins. Just, it, you know, in another world, maybe, or at least if Bayley wasn't champion for so long, maybe I'd give her a run at it. As a shock and awe type of champion.
Sure.
And so Bayley, especially with Tamina getting the victory over Bayley this week, ain't going to happen on Sunday.
No.
And so Tamina, you know, if it was straight up one-on-one and no help, Tamina would beat Bayley. But there's going to be maybe help from Sasha, or having her Bayley use the ropes, or some kind of trickery, which I'm fine with. I think Bayley as champion is starting to get under my skin in a good way, because I want to see someone take it off her.
Exactly. To be clear, we are similar on this. Clearly, I really, really like Bayley as champion, and I've loved the story they've been telling with her. She's one of those people that I never saw as a heel because of the character that she was, but she's been a fantastic heel. And same way as like Gargano and Candice LeRae on NXT, where you never saw it, but once they did it, they really took to it. It became great heels. And this is a great way to shine Tamina up, make her look strong. You can tell the story of, if you hadn't cheated or if Sasha hadn't helped or whatever happens, I would have beaten you one-on-one. But this Bayley-Sasha thing is like the other world anti-universe mega powers exploding, where we just keep doing it and it's not good the whole time. But that's clearly what they're building to, and she's not losing it to Tamina.
No, no way. I don't see a story for this. There's just none. There is nothing. And to your point about the whole heel Bayley, yes. I think as time goes on, she's gotten better. I think at first, like you said, people didn't know how to react because, and I don't think she did either, because she was not open. I know that she did an interview, I think it might have been a year or two ago, that she would never want to turn heel.
Right.
And she wouldn't even know what to do. She wouldn't want to break the girls' hearts or whatever. And WWE turned her heel. And I applaud WWE for doing it and sticking with it. And I think that as the weeks have gone on, the months have gone on, she's starting to become much more comfortable in that role. So I think even for her at first, it was just a much big, huge difference. And trying to adapt to what that heel Bayley character would look like, she's, I think, starting to identify what that is. So yes, I'm enjoying Bayley as a heel and her chicken, you know what, type of moves, and using Sasha as a bodyguard of sorts and taking the hits when she needs to. It's been good, and I'm on board for a long Bayley run. Maybe, and again, we all look at SummerSlam as the next destination, but that's really the next time I could see her losing it. And the whole Lacey Evans thing too. Did you have comments on that?
I did. It just excuse me, the same way that Tamina's really gotten to show character because she took it upon herself to do it on social media, Lacey Evans has done that. I saw Lacey Evans years ago at a live event that my wife was nice enough to take me to, and she still had just a generic Marine woman kind of gimmick. She didn't have her Lacey Evans gimmick yet, and on TV it's been so-so at best for Lacey Evans, but on social media, she's doing prep for Money in the Bank, and she got the blueprints for the corporate offices, and she had weaknesses written down for the other competitors. It's interesting to see people like that when they're left to their own devices. You forget with this system that I don't think works creatively in WWE that these are really creative people, that when they get a chance to do something outside of it, I know Lacey Evans isn't winning, but it makes me want her to win because she's going over blueprints and writing down that people get winded easily and to take them down at the knees. And Tamina's been able to do the same thing. And I feel like it helps the performers to be able to show that different side.
That's exactly what social media has done. You know, as often as we may say that it's been killing the business, and let's be honest, it's at times absolutely just destroys any believability that it has left with, like, heels and faces, and they're, you know, they're having drinks and smiling and hugging. And it's just, I mean, some of that stuff still is not my taste, but something like this, it can show what that person is capable of beyond the micromanagement of what creative and what Vince McMahon has for this character. It shows that, you know, these people can do other things beyond just what they're told to do. And with Lacey Evans, I know she's on this kind of like Rosie the Riveter type of like character. That's, I think, what they've built her around, is Rosie the Riveter. I mean, she even does the pose. Yeah. So I get it. She's a strong woman. She's independent. She's military. I get it. But I mean, I'm not against it. But it's just like, okay, I see what you're doing. It's Rosie the Riveter. But give us something more. And I don't know what that is with her. And we'll get to her match in just a minute or two. Yeah. But I don't dislike Lacey. I like her in-ring. Her in-ring style, she's gotten much better since she debuted. Mm-hmm. And especially with the match that she had with, Baron Corbin against Becky Lynch and Seth Rollins last year.
Yeah.
She's gotten better since then. And I don't know. It's just, I think the whole environment of WWE, it's stifling creativity. And I think that with the recent layoffs of 40-plus employees and independent contractors and so forth, that it's even going to be a tighter type of control and also have people be a little bit more afraid to bring things up for the fear that they could be, you know, reprimanded in a way that ends up being terminating their contract. So that thing is a whole other discussion, but I think people are honestly afraid to bring that up, and they just kind of do what they're told in general.
They have. And this has been a thing since John Moxley, at that point, Dean Ambrose being on the Steve Austin show that they did on the network. And that interview went haywire. And Steve has talked about that being a regret of his and him basically saying, I wish guys would take more chances. And whenever Cena's interviewed, he says that guys have to not be afraid to fail and go out there and do what you want to do. And I think that that's easy to say when you're at the level of a John Cena or you're the level of a Stone Cold and in an era where that was important and that was not frowned upon. But for people in WWE in 2020, not only do you run the risk of going out there doing something that gets over that they just don't like, see Zack Ryder, see Daniel Bryan before they were forced to, see a lot of people, see Damian Mizdow. Not only do you run the risk of that, I've done a few of these on the NXT podcast, I would frankly be afraid to look at somebody the wrong way at backstage, because apparently people are getting fired for no reason in a multi-million dollar company. What I'm certainly not going to do is go out there and just do my own thing, because I know that WWE doesn't go with an idea that's not theirs. And if you start something big, yeah, maybe you'll get to a point where the fans demand it like Daniel Bryan, but especially in an environment like this where there are no fans, you have no backup, you have no safety net, and clearly WWE has no problem with throwing you out on your butt for no reason.
Yep. Yes. And even if you go out there and you do something that does work and it gets over, like you said, who knows for how long? And once it eventually fades out, which everything does, the WWE will probably look at you and say, you know, that you can't be trusted because you went out there doing something that you weren't supposed to do. Mm-hmm. And look at where you are now. But where could you have been if you just did what we told you to do for the last month or whatever? You know, so I think it's a lose-lose. I mean, like, it's so easy to say, oh, just go out on a limb, you know, do this, this, and this. Yeah, if it was 1998... I mean, but that's not the environment now. And so I don't blame anyone for not doing that, because if it was my livelihood, I wouldn't take a risk either with that. I might, like, I don't even know. Like you said, like, looking at somebody wrong. Yeah. But if I had something, if I had an idea, I would just bring it to the office. Like, if it gets shot down, I'd be like, well, at least I brought it up. I'm not going to go on air and, you know, go into business for myself and take a huge risk for my livelihood. And so I totally get it. It's not the wrestlers. It's the environment, the culture in WWE, which we're not just speculating. This has been verified time and again by wrestlers who have left, most notably John Moxley, who had one of the best post-WWE interviews with Chris Jericho that I've ever heard in my life. I mean, it validated everything that the fans thought was going on backstage. So, I mean, I loved it, and that's exactly why people don't take chances, and I don't blame them.
Not at all, and if the store that I worked for had the same policy as WWE, and I had to come home one day and tell my wife, hey, I got fired, and she said, why? And I said, it's because I wore a blue shirt instead of a red shirt. Like, I'm not taking that risk, because if something doesn't work out and it's their idea, they're more likely to try something else. But if I go out there with a blue shirt instead of a red shirt, and then I don't get over it, they're just, like you said, going to say, well, if you just worn the red shirt, they're going to release me or do nothing with me. And I'm just not taking that chance. It's not worth it to do it, because even if it works, even if the blue shirt is better, they're not going to care because it wasn't their idea.
Yep, they're not going to care. And I think even if it got over, they would probably say, well, it was just like a temporary thing. Let's go with what the plan was. And now we know we can't trust that person. Mm-hmm. It is just a lose-lose, and it is all on the culture that has been created. So, okay. Well, I think we've said our piece on that. I could go on a rant on that. I mean, just the culture of WWE, and I'm not even in the organization. I obviously don't work for the place, but hearing the post interviews are just the best, because it just so tells you, it's an eye into the backstage toxic environment at times that is created, and it's always validated. So, okay, well, moving on. The Universal Championship, Braun Strowman versus Bray Wyatt. Again, I'm going to let you go first here. Is there any chance that Braun Strowman loses here?
Doesn't seem like it, does it? Seems like it would be weird for Braun to lose to just Bray. Obviously, Braun wasn't supposed to be your Universal Champion. Your Universal Champion was supposed to be redacted, but he wasn't able to come because he's a selfish jerk who wouldn't show up for Vince, and Vince felt abandoned. See the NXT podcast for that whole rant. I'm going to jump off my soapbox. He won it kind of by accident, but now he's your Universal Champion. They're clearly telling a story between him and Bray and The Fiend, but this definitely feels like something where they're either trying to keep The Fiend, or rather keep Bray Wyatt, excuse me, in the title picture, because it seems to me that Bray Wyatt cares about the Universal Championship, but The Fiend does not. It would seem to me that The Fiend cares more about hurting people, whereas Bray Wyatt has like actual tangible wrestling goals. And it would just seem to me that it would be very unlikely that Braun would lose to Bray. If this were The Fiend, I would pick The Fiend. We saw him wrestle once against The Miz as Bray Wyatt, and unlike a lot of people, I actually enjoyed that match. It was more of a story than it was a match, and I'm always fine with that if it's a good story. And The Fiend appeared on the Titantron, so maybe they do a thing where The Fiend distracts him and Bray wins, but I just don't see a world where regular Bray Wyatt, who doesn't have any of these special powers, beats Braun Strowman. They're either going to have Bray lose, he can move on to somebody else, or SummerSlam is Braun and The Fiend, where The Fiend takes it back. But I don't see regular Bray Wyatt beating Braun Strowman.
Nope. This is a very definitive win for Braun Strowman. And I don't mean a squash. I mean, it's not going to be a squash, but I think it's going to be a decisive win for Strowman. And this is how it should start, because you don't want to start at the top of what people want to see potentially in The Fiend versus Strowman. This is clearly Bray Wyatt versus Strowman. And this is like Clark Kent versus Strowman, not Superman versus Strowman yet. And I think that's exactly what WWE is doing, because the next step, logically, is The Fiend. And after Strowman wins, I could see the lights going out and The Fiend appearing and attacking Strowman, or just teasing that he's going to attack him and then disappearing. Some kind of hocus pocus with that.
It's taped. You could do it.
Yep, exactly. So to me, this is – I don't expect a five-star match by any means. This is probably going to run maybe 10, 12 minutes. I don't expect this to be a very long match.
No.
It doesn't need to be. I actually enjoy less Bray Wyatt, because I like Bray Wyatt's character so much that I want to see him less. And people that don't get what I'm saying, maybe you haven't been a wrestling fan for that long. I mean, because the more I see something, the less special it becomes. And so I would like to see less of Bray Wyatt in this match. I think the less amount of time that Bray Wyatt's matches are, the better they have been. So to me, this is a fairly quick match with Braun Strowman, who wins, and then that's where the transformation of The Fiend comes in to go to part two. That's my thinking. As you said, it could be a SummerSlam. We're always building towards SummerSlam now.
Yeah.
I mean, this is, to me, the next massive destination. And yeah, there are going to be a pay-per-view or two in between there, but if you're going to start building the story of The Fiend and Strowman, which maybe they're doing, I don't even know who they could do after that. Roman Reigns isn't coming back anytime soon. They've pretended he doesn't exist anymore. Mm-hmm. So, probably The Fiend versus Strowman is next, maybe in a couple of months. But Strowman wins here. I don't think there's any question about that.
Strowman definitely wins, and I almost wish they wouldn't do Fiend-Strowman, just because I don't know that The Fiend needs the championship. You had a problem when he had the championship that you couldn't see anybody beating him. I mean, you and I got on this podcast and we explored the possibility that Goldberg could win just because it's Vince, but that certainly wasn't the right person to beat him. Eventually you have somebody built up that can beat him, whether you circle back around with Daniel Bryan or you use somebody else. But I don't think The Fiend should lose, but I almost wish they would avoid the match, just because I feel like when you put it on The Fiend, it limits him a little bit more. His whole thing has been about revenge, and I feel like you can do that without the title and tell more stories with Strowman, but I think you're absolutely right. I think Strowman retains.
And the other thing I was thinking about as I was watching SmackDown, I said, what if Strowman did actually join Bray Wyatt again? I mean, you know, because, and I don't mean in the same way of him kind of being in the background of Bray Wyatt as the black sheep and not saying things and going back to the way he was. I'm talking about an evolved Braun Strowman here. And there were moments in that exchange between Wyatt and Strowman where Strowman was almost considering it, or almost that Wyatt was touching on sensitive parts of his past. And it seemed as if he, for a couple of moments, maybe intentionally or not through his acting, that he was considering joining Bray Wyatt. And I don't think it would happen right away. It could be a build to when he faces the Fiend, that eventually he succumbs to the mind games. I don't know. But I wouldn't put it out of the realm of possibility that he joins the Fiend and the Fiend captures the belt. And then you have Strowman being the massive heavy for Bray Wyatt, adding depth to his character. And I mean, it's just a thought. I don't know. It would be certainly interesting. I don't know. What do you think? That's even a possibility, or would you be on board for that?
I would. I hadn't actually considered it, but I almost, in a way, think that would be the best way that you could go, because thus far with the Fiend, the people that he's faced have either been changed by him, Seth Rollins, Daniel Bryan, or they've disappeared, John Cena, that fantastic match that we all really loved a lot. But it would be interesting, or something to that effect. It would be interesting if he were able to turn somebody, because they were together for quite a while, and that cult leader is still in there. They haven't strayed away from the fact that it's the same character, and although I've never had the chance to be in a cult as of yet, I don't know if, you know, if we start one, great, but if I were in a cult and I were following this cult leader without question for however long, I would imagine that if I break out on my own, become a success, become the top guy, and then that person aims back at me, I imagine that there's a possibility you could be turned back under that same cult leader who's now different and is more powerful. So yeah, I actually do buy it, and I think that that would be the best version of the story that you could tell, because then if he does take the title, now you have something interesting to do with Strowman, who they haven't really known what to do with. Yeah, I like it. I think that would work.
It just becomes a question of, if they go that road, how long does it take for Strowman to go back to his dark ways? And, you know, like, do they go the long road? Do they play the long game? Or do they just hotshot it? And God knows, I mean, what if they do it Sunday night? I mean, you don't know. Braun Strowman's singles title runs have gone about as long as this podcast. I mean, so it's been, you know, and honestly, I don't connect with the Braun Strowman that is champion right now. Like, I don't dislike the character. It's just, there's not a lot to him. He's just this big, burly guy. He can do crazy things for his size. He's an okay promo. He can, you know, lift big things like big men do. And he talks in a big, scary monster voice. Like, I don't know anything beyond that. And he was in the Wyatt family. So I have no emotional connection whatsoever to Braun Strowman. None. So him leaving and joining Bray Wyatt again, to me, would be infinitely more interesting as to how Bray Wyatt was able to convince him, why Braun Strowman did what he did, and to see Bray Wyatt start a group again. It would just, to me, be a much more interesting way to go. I know some people are like, oh, well, he just beat Goldberg. Why would you have him at WrestleMania win and then give the belt to Braun Strowman? But to me, what are you going to do with Braun Strowman? What's the long-term game with Strowman? There's nothing there. I don't think fans, honestly, were going, I can't wait. I'm so happy that Braun Strowman's champion. I've been waiting for this forever. I think the majority of fans are not saying that. I liked him as Intercontinental Champion. I was looking forward to him and Sami Zayn battling it out. I loved that program. And it just stopped dead in its tracks, and now he's Universal Champion. So, I don't know. I would vote it, if it was up to me, he would turn Sunday. I mean, like, I would have him do that. Everyone's going, what? What's going on? It would create a huge buzz. People would be going nuts. I would love it. I mean, that's how I would do it.
I think that would be good. And if this same thing were happening, but it were like 2 years ago, everybody would care, because then Braun Strowman was hot, Braun Strowman was new, they were doing interesting things with him. But he's the opposite of Drew McIntyre. Drew McIntyre's had this story built up for him, and he's proven himself. Braun Strowman was used sparingly. They didn't know what to do with him, and then they needed an emergency guy to take over for Redacted, and he won the title. So we don't care, because there was no story behind it. But if you add a story to it and you give him more to do, yeah, we might be able to do something with this. I'm with you. I would have him turn Sunday, start telling that story. And if he does eventually break off from The Fiend, then you can kind of restart what we had with Braun Strowman a few years ago and work from there. I like it.
Exactly. And they didn't hit it when it was hot. I mean, there was a time when we would have, oh, Braun Strowman, why isn't he champion? How is he? Yep. There was a time. But like you said, he has cooled off significantly since then. He got cut and pasted into the championship match at WrestleMania with no explanation, no story, nothing. Nope. Of which, to me, is just inexplicable. It's a cardinal sin to not explain why a main event of WrestleMania is suddenly yeah. somebody else.
Yeah.
And I know that you don't want to go into, oh, well, Roman decided that his family was more important than risking coronavirus. I get it. You don't want to say that, but maybe give us anything. Nothing. They give us nothing, which means, okay, what did he do to earn this? I mean, yep. Other than, okay, he's been a guy that's been around a while. We wish he was Universal Champion a couple of years ago, but you didn't give us anything. He lost the Intercontinental Championship, was in a great program with Sami Zayn, and gets cut and pasted into the Universal Championship match with no reasoning. And I that is, to me, just it's an insult to fans' intelligence to just believe that somebody just – it's put in the main event of WrestleMania. But all right, well, I'm going on a rant. But okay, let's move on. And that is the next championship match here, the WWE Championship, Drew McIntyre versus Seth Rollins. Again, I'll let you go first on this one.
Thank you kindly. This is an interesting match from a few perspectives. It's Seth Rollins versus like his big brother. That's fun.
Oh, yeah.
It's like if Seth Rollins grew up to be big and strong. It's fun. And you have Drew, who I think has just been great as WWE champion. And this is another one where I wish there had been a crowd, because I wish I could hear the reactions for him every week, because I bet you they would be great. And Drew's been really, really good. I like Seth Rollins' new gimmick. I don't love it. Don't feel like it's fleshed out yet. But it's definitely interesting, and he's better as a heel. Kind of seems like more of a heel as a person from what we've seen. I think it's going to be a really good match, but I think the absolute right choice is for Drew to retain. I don't think you go right back to Seth Rollins. So I think Drew retains, and we keep building Drew McIntyre as the guy.
And this one seems to be almost a lock as well.
Right.
Pretty damn close to a lock. I mean, as close as it can get. There's no way you would think that WWE would take the belt off of Drew after the journey he went on and winning at Mania, toppling Brock Lesnar.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way that they would have Seth Rollins beat Drew clean, even in some kind of wonky finish of cheating to win.
Right.
This, even with Murphy there, or even if AOP come back, whatever the case may be, I love the Seth Rollins character. I'm not a fan of how they got him into a championship match,
mm-hmm.
given he lost at WrestleMania. This is where wins and losses suddenly don't matter again.
Yeah.
And attacking the champion gets you an opportunity at the belt, although that's just been the way that WWE's booked their championship matches for years and years and years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is stupid. But I love that this match on paper really excites me. I didn't think they'd go to it this quickly. I thought this could easily be SummerSlam worthy, easily. And they went right to it right after WrestleMania. And I'm fine with it, because I know that it's going to be a great match in the ring, the two professionals doing what they do. And I think that Seth has started to rebuild himself after the WrestleMania loss. He has sort of morphed into this quiet anger type of he is a messiah, but he's starting – his body language has changed. His promo style has adjusted to a kind of a slow, methodical
mm-hmm.
– I'm starting to truly believe that I'm a messiah. Let me take that burden from you. Let me carry that cross, so to speak. He's really touching on some religious type of symbolism, and I love what he's doing with his character right now. Could it be better? Yes. Do I miss him having backup other than Murphy? Yes. I don't know why they all disbanded. It just happened.
Yeah.
And other than the injury to AOP, I just don't know. But Drew, to his credit, has done. I love him as champion too. He just feels like a champion. He doesn't feel like somebody trying to play a champion. Like last year when Seth Rollins won against Brock Lesnar, it didn't feel authentic. It felt very forced. I never got on board. And this isn't playing, you know, Monday morning quarterback. This is, like, I said it in real time that Seth just doesn't feel like a true babyface champion that I can get behind. It just didn't ever feel right. And Drew just feels right. But to Drew's credit, he can also play an amazing heel. I would like to have Drew at some point in his career have a massive heel run. He could do both. And right now he's on a very, very good babyface run as champion. He looks and feels the part. He feels authentic. There's nothing phony about him, which is, I think, what the crowd sensed with Roman and John Cena, and felt phony at times. So with Drew, everything right now is clicking. He is just right now a machine. He is a beast. I love what he's doing. And to me, this could be easily the match of the night if given enough time. Drew wins here with a Claymore. I think that's how it goes. I'm concerned about Seth's character, though, because it's almost like Seth really needs the win, but Drew can't afford to lose at all. So maybe this ends in some kind of DQ finish. I mean, to protect both guys, because I don't want to see Seth go on a downward spiral. There's a lot of good to build there. So,
yeah, as somebody who just had to watch Charlotte Flair, Io Shirai, end in a DQ, pretty please don't do a DQ.
yeah, that's true. That's true.
Dude, had to take a minute before I recorded, so I didn't
swear.
I forgot
about that.
Yeah, I didn't. I agree with you. It feels like he needs a win, because usually when you're building a heel like this, they're building up wins, and this is a snake bit kind of match. AOP's not around because one of them got hurt. Murphy, I want to say, was hurt for a second, but he's back. Seth Rollins is in this match because Kevin Owens got hurt in theirs. It's been a weird build to a Money in the Bank championship match, and so they just kind of scrambled a reason together for the champion to challenge the challenger, which always seems stupid, but here we are. But yeah, I mean, I agree with you. But Drew, I think, just wins with the Claymore, and then you can still tell a story of Seth, who thus far has been very sure of himself and very destiny-oriented, and then to deal with the fact that he wasn't the chosen one for the championship, and to see how he reacts to that. I bet you it's not well. But I'm interested to see, and I think Drew just goes over with the Claymore, and we continue his story.
Yeah, it could be. I'm maybe overthinking it, and it's just a Claymore and a victory, and we move on. Or it could be that Seth gets Claymore, loses, and then after the match, Drew gets beat down by a returning AOP. I don't know how close they are to returning.
Yeah.
And Murphy, and then Seth Rollins. All of them beat down Drew, maybe to like a bloody pulp, so to speak. And that's where you want to see Drew get his revenge again. And that's where that leads to the next step of their program. I don't know, honestly, how long this program could go. You could stretch it out many months, but I don't know who's next in line for Drew. That's the key, right? And so this is a program you could stop, do it now, and then come back to at SummerSlam, unless Brock Lesnar decides to come back on his, you know, summer vacation and pop in for SummerSlam, which is what he does. I mean, he's a SummerSlam, Survivor Series occasionally, Rumble, Mania, and that's just what he does. So, yeah. So I don't know. Either way, just looking at it in the very short term, I think this could be a really good match. Easily could be the match of the night, and I think ultimately Drew comes back on top. I just see no scenario to have Seth Rollins win this.
So. No, it's true.
All right. Well, moving on here to the Money in the Bank matches here. And I'll start with the women's. I know they're happening simultaneously. Don't ask me why that's happening. But because I really don't want to. I'm trying to conserve my energy. The women's Money in the Bank ladder match. Shayna Baszler, Asuka, Nia, Lacey, Carmella, and Dana Brooke. Take it away, Zach.
All right. This is a good group of people in this match. Except that I wish that like Nia had decided to spend more time with her family and not been in it. it feels like feels like Shane is going to win, and I want Asuka to win. Obviously, an outside chance of somebody else winning because Nia, Asuka, and Shayna have had a thing going between the three of them. But it definitely feels like Shayna is going to win. It feels like she would fit with the briefcase. But I love what Asuka's been doing as well, and so I would love to see her with the briefcase and love to see her back on top. She's beyond good enough to do it. But it, if I have to make a pick, it's Shayna.
Yeah, she's easily the heavy favorite here, just as she was in the Elimination Chamber match. And she just completely leveled everybody. And she could do it again here. They have mm-hmm. done a lot of rebuilding of Shayna, breaking people's arms for a couple of weeks. And just being nasty. And this past week saying that she does her talking in the ring. And WWE has certainly put a focus on her. And you could have her. I think she's the most interesting to hold it, simply for the fact of she could hold it over Becky's head for many months,
true.
Teasing when she's going to cash it in. And I think it has to be a heel to win this. I think Money in the Bank matches, I haven't done an actual analysis on it in terms of percentages, but I would love to know the percentage of Money in the Bank winners, men or women, that have been a heel that have won. I would say it is a very, very high percentage because this match is built for heels to win. Why would you have a babyface that you're trying to build win this match for an opportunity to take advantage of an opponent at their weakest moment? I mean, it just screams heel to win this match because you would take somebody when they are at their lowest to win the belt. I mean, and you could do what John Cena's done and say, okay, I'm cashing this in. I'm giving you a week's notice, doing the stand-up thing. But that's not interesting. That's not any fun with the Money in the Bank ladder match. So to me, these are two matches built for heels to win. And so, yeah, Shayna Baszler, I think, is a favorite. I think a close second would be Asuka and or Nia Jax. No way Lacey wins. No way Carmella or Dana Brooke win. They are there to just take bumps.
Yep.
Nia Jax win this, I could see a world in which Nia Jax wins. I know you're not a fan, but
why are you doing this to me, Matt?
Well, here's the thing, too. I mean, I know they'll never do it, but hey, maybe they want to reinforce the steel rungs on the ladder she climbs, right? I mean, they'll never, and I'm not body shaming. The fact is, she's probably 200 plus pounds. Like, yeah. She is, but they'll never say it. But
no,
she
they
is.
Won't.
No, she's probably a good 50 pounds away from Otis. Maybe. I mean, really.
Yeah, It's not a body image thing. She's a bigger person, and
yep.
they tell that story differently with Otis. And on the idea of people who cash in, you're not the only one that can do research. We've had a few winners. We had Seth Rollins, who won it as a heel. CM Punk won it twice. When he cashed in, it was like a heel. Edge won it. He was a heel. Daniel Bryan was a face. RVD a face. Dolph Ziggler a heel. Randy Orton a heel. John Cena, because he needed it. That kid needed something. A face. Alberto Del Rio, heel. Kane, heel. Sheamus, heel. Sandow, face. That went super well. Jack Swagger, heel. Mr. Kennedy, heel. Lost it to Edge. Dean Ambrose was a face. Corbin was a heel. That one went super good.
Mm-hmm.
Braun Strowman. Those are almost all heels, because the way that you cash it in is usually as a heel. It's usually a heel. You're right. And so you're absolutely right. Nia could win it, and I'll make you have me back on. It's going to be 2 hours of me complaining about that. Or, you know, I think it is as simple as Shayna just winning it or outside chance of Asuka.
Yeah. There's – you know, I would love to see Asuka. The thing is, though, that after the build to WrestleMania with Becky, and she had a couple mm-hmm. of matches with Becky that she lost clean to Becky Lynch, and one of them I think was the rematch on Raw that she lost in like 5 minutes.
Yep.
And I'm like, what the hell is happening? What is happening to Asuka?
Yeah.
So I think that WWE has defined her where she is right now, which is a great in-ring hand. She's honestly, as much as I used to hate her on the mic, she to me is annoyingly charming. That's the only way I can put it. Like, you hear her speak and she's yelling and screaming and she's being very, very cartoonish in her facial expressions, and it's just embarrassing. But then you're like, but I kind of enjoy watching her just lose it in another language. And then you hear a couple of like English words like easy peasy or like some kind of like phrase that you're like, oh, okay, I know what she's saying. Oh, now I lost you. Like, yep. She's just annoyingly charming, and I've kind of just come to grow with her of like, I'm just accepting the fact that I'm not going to understand 90% of what she says.
True.
But I think that based on the fact that Asuka and Becky Lynch has just happened a few months ago, they probably won't be teasing that again simply for the fact that it just happened. So I would say Nia Jax or Baszler based on that. Asuka's an outside, I think, probably number three for me now. Yeah. But to me, Shayna is probably – she's a heavy favorite, and she should be a heavy favorite in this match, just how they've booked.
It's the less interesting of the two just because you kind of know or at least think it's going to be Shayna.
Exactly. Yep. All right, now we get to the men's Money in the Bank ladder match. AJ Styles, Daniel Bryan, Aleister Black, King Corbin, Rey Mysterio, and good Lord Otis. any chance, I'll just ask you the question. You can give me your predictions and thoughts. Mm-hmm. Any opportunity or any chance AJ Styles doesn't win this?
Weird, right? Feels kind of like the Shayna thing, doesn't it? I think that there is a chance. I think overwhelmingly AJ is the favorite to win. And frankly, I can see him with the briefcase, and I certainly wouldn't be mad if he wins. But AJ Styles has been WWE champion twice. The outside chance that I think that we have, depending on what they think about him, is Aleister Black. And I think if I can pick a person to win, it would be Aleister Black, because I feel like he was always going to end up being a main eventer. He's too good and too unique not to. But it just depends on whether WWE wants to use this Money in the Bank to elevate somebody, or they want to put it on who's probably going to be the best character with it, which is AJ Styles. We've touched on the fact that it's usually a heel who wins. We contacted our research department. That was like 90% heels. It's probably going to be AJ, but before AJ got added to it, I thought it was going to be Aleister Black.
I'm with you. I thought Aleister Black had an opportunity until AJ came out of nowhere, of which if you read a lot of the websites, wrestling websites like I do, apparently he wasn't happy or overwhelmed with his return, and that they could have done much more, given the fact that AJ Styles was buried alive. And his character comes back generally the same. Nothing changed about his character. Just kind of like he mentioned it that, oh yeah, I was buried, but that was then and this is now.
Well, crazy that he changed. Wasn't happy with that, huh?
Yeah, I know. It kind of reminded me of what Dean Ambrose, John Moxley, said on Jericho's podcast, mm-hmm. of how he was so excited to come back, and he's got all these ideas, and he's pitching into the office, he's doing this and that, and he comes back, and he's just kind of like, he just comes back as like, I've got a lunatic or something.
Lunatic in mine.
Yes.
It's like four different pops, they ruin everything.
Yes, that's a yes. So it reminded me of that to a T when AJ Styles talked about how he was not happy with his return. As far as what they could have done, and no character change whatsoever, just kind of like slot him right back in, just what they did with John Morrison, slot him right back to where he was 8 years ago. I mean, so I'm totally with AJ Styles on that one. I mean, I think AJ Styles is due for some kind of character change. Yeah. I'm not saying turn him babyface, just do something different with his, I don't know. I think something kind of needs to change with AJ, but he's amazing in the ring. We all know that. I think he's easily the heavy favorite. He's the Shayna Baszler of the men's match. I think he's the right person to win. I know people, you and many others, and honestly, up until AJ Styles returned, I said, yeah, probably going to be Aleister Black. But, I mean, Aleister Black right now is booked as a babyface, which means you don't really necessarily wanting him to win. I'm okay with the long game on this guy.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think Aleister Black should be a heel. I have no idea how like this guy is a babyface. And I don't mean that I don't like his character. I just go, what redeeming qualities does this guy have?
Yeah.
He doesn't really talk. He's just sitting in a room and cutting promos. Well, he did. And he comes to the ring, has great matches. His black mask knocks out teeth on a weekly basis. Mm-hmm. I get it, but I don't know. AJ Styles, I think, is the favorite. Daniel Bryan, very unlikely. It's crazy that we're not even really discussing Daniel Bryan as a possibility.
Yeah.
But it's almost as if the WWE's kind of found their comfortable slot with Daniel, and that the fans have kind of come to a realization that they'll never get what they got with him back at, you know, in what was it, WrestleMania 30, that they'll never get that moment again with him, and that they're just kind of accustomed to him popping in and out of title pictures, but never really being that guy anymore that the company leans on. And it's kind of crazy that we're thinking that way, but I think he'll be good in this match. He'll probably have a few moments where you go, oh my God, could he actually win?
Yeah.
And that's fine. But ultimately, I think AJ Styles is going to win, and I think he's the right person to win because he could hang it over Drew McIntyre's head for many, many weeks. And AJ Styles versus Drew McIntyre is certainly a match I'd want to see. So yeah. To me, AJ Styles, I don't care that this is predictable.
No.
AJ is the right person to win. I'm also great with the long game with Aleister Black because he could be an amazing main eventer down the line, especially with Drew McIntyre versus Aleister Black. Yeah, that could be a main event anywhere if done right. So there's a lot of good in this match. AJ needs to win, though.
I think you talked me into it as you were talking, because looking at the list again, the faces that have won it, at least some of them, RVD, Sandow, Cena, the common thread amongst them is that when they cash in, they either cash in RVD at the One Night Stand pay-per-view, Damian Sandow on John Cena on Raw for later that night, and John Cena also called it ahead of time. Number one, it's more boring when you call it ahead of time as opposed to seeing somebody run out with the briefcase. Number two, if Aleister Black were to win and he's a face, chances are they're just going to have him challenge Drew ahead of time. And then you're not going to beat Drew yet, but you don't want to see Aleister lose his first championship match. That's what happened to Braun Strowman. So I think I agree with you. It definitely needs to go on a heel, and I think it has to be AJ. I think you're right.
And this could be a hell of an interesting match. And
oh, yeah.
I never really asked you that because we didn't even really discuss the fact that this is going to be held in WWE headquarters, which means they get to run their funky little cinematic presentation of what they think wrestling is. And I don't want to get on that road with you because we all know where we stand. But with that being said, we got a quick preview on Monday. I think it was Monday that of how things are going to look. They went through like the offices and showed us the different places, which was cool. I appreciated that of like the conference rooms and like a room full of like computers and the hallways. And eventually they got to the roof and they have a ring set up on the roof. Which is smart. It makes sense that they're not going to hang it from a flagpole. I mean, so it made sense. And I'm glad they did that to kind of give us the lay of the land of what these men and women are going to be competing in. So are you looking forward to this most unique Money in the Bank ladder match in WWE history of doing it in WWE headquarters? Or would you rather have just had it kind of a traditional in the ring ladder match that we've seen in the past? I mean, we've never seen it done in this way. So
no, man, I'm all in with this, the way that they're doing it. It's the Money in the Bank match is always super exciting and I always look forward to it. But the times that we are in have presented them a unique opportunity to do things different and to start at the bottom floor of the corporate headquarters and work your way up through the building gives you so many chances. That way you can run two matches at the same time because corporate is humongous and you can have the women in one area, the men in one area, they cross through. There's opportunity for comedy. Vince better be in his office when they go in there and they trash it. That better happen. And work your way through and just destroying the place until you get to the top where you can shoot it more cinematically. But to your point and to a lot of fans' points who didn't enjoy, you know, Fiend Cena at WrestleMania because it was too much on that side, I don't think you have to worry about it here because I think, and I mean this in the best way possible, it's going to be the best version of Edge and Randy Orton where they make use of the space and they can use a lot of time because you're seeing a lot of different creative people put in a situation where they basically have unlimited creativity. So I'm all in with the way they're doing it.
And I will say, I am more open to this than I probably would have normally been if it was like a week after Mania.
Yeah.
I'm open to see how they do it. I'm sure there will be cameras where there shouldn't be. And I don't need sound effects. Just leave everyone as is. And just shoot it the way it's supposed to be shot. And yeah, there'll be some interaction with the men and women. I'm sure they'll cross paths, and that'll be fun.
Yeah.
But I, as long as this isn't presented seriously and not in some kind of like hokey, let's see how many special effects we can put in the match.
Right.
I'm fine with it. And seeing them battle throughout the building will be fun to see the different rooms, because none of us, the majority of us have not been in WWE headquarters. So we're going to actually get a kind of a tour of sorts of with this match. And that's kind of cool. I will say, I do not envy whoever has to be in charge of sanitizing the place after this match happens.
Oh, boy.
The task at hand there, I mean, just the sheer volume of things that the guys and girls are going to have to touch, I don't even know how they're going to actually do it. I mean, they must have a team of like 50 to 100 people that are going to sanitize every inch of that place after these guys tear it up. So, but yeah, fine. I'm looking forward to it. If they sprinkle it throughout the show, I mean, even better. It kind of builds to the main event. If they do it in part one, part two, part three, part four, whatever, that's fine. I'll be more open to it as long as it's presented seriously. And that's what I'm looking for. So, Zach, anything else that we didn't touch on, whether it's in Money in the Bank or any other topic we didn't discuss you wanted to touch?
Man, I don't think so. I think we covered it pretty well. I'm really excited for this pay-per-view, and I think I'm so excited because the Money in the Bank is going to run throughout the show. It's going to kind of break up the fact that this is happening in an empty arena that's going to look the same as Raw and SmackDown, just with green because it's Money in the Bank. And I think that they're not going to make it comedy, and they're not going to put a bunch of effects in it, because I think it's going to be Edge Orton, but more interesting, and it's going to warrant the match length. And I think it's going to be one of the most it has the chance to be one of the most unique pay-per-views WWE's ever done, and that's saying something. And it also gives you a good chance to elevate a lot of people. You can shine Tamina up, and then you have another contender in the women's division. You can make a new tag team in the Lucha House Party, and you can reestablish Miz and Morrison, really get the Sons of Anarchy kind of over as Vicious. You can do a lot of great, great character work with Bray Wyatt and Braun Strowman. Bray Wyatt always brings the excellent character work for what we lack sometimes in just move five-star match quality. It's always a great story, and he's my favorite character in wrestling. You have the opportunity to continue making Drew McIntyre as the guy who's uniquely suited to be the guy, and also tell a good story with Seth Rollins afterward, because he's now not the chosen one. It wasn't Destiny. The women's Money in the Bank, even if you just have Shayna win, you now have another opportunity for Shayna to kind of be that heel and eventually win that women's championship. If you go with AJ Styles, you're going to have an interesting cash in soon after that, probably. And I'm never going to be upset seeing AJ Styles as the WWE champion. Or if you go with Aleister Black, you have a chance to make a guy there. So I think it's going to be very unique, and I think we have a unique opportunity to make a lot of people, which isn't always the case here. So we're going to have to see how it actually shakes up. Often we set ourselves up with high expectations and they're not met. But I think this Money in the Bank match is going to be really, really good.
You could be right. And that was a nice summation of all of the good things that could come out of all six of these matches, of the potential of building new stars. And that's ultimately what we're all trying to do. And what WWE should be focused on is building new stars and maybe see who can come up and take that next step, I guess, pun intended, not intentionally. But this could be, like you said, it could be a very noteworthy pay-per-view that is otherwise looked at as, I wouldn't say B pay-per-view, but it's kind of like, all right, well, it's Money in the Bank.
It's not the Big Four.
Yeah, exactly. It's not the Big Four. It's certainly not a Saudi show, thank God. So it is a noteworthy match, a noteworthy pay-per-view that is usually focused on, and it's very top-heavy of the Money in the Bank ladder match itself. So if they sprinkle that throughout the show, I think that's a great way to present the match in a much different way than just giving it all at once. And like you said, it takes us out of the arena format. It puts us in a building, so I'm open to that. And it's going to be very interesting to see how they end up on the roof and how that happens, like what happens in the ring and all the different things that happens with Otis. And like, there's a lot happening here. And, I'm looking forward to it. I mean, so very, very good on the summation of that, of the entire card. I think that was good. All right. Well, Zach, anything else? Or if not, you can share your social media with everyone if they're not already following you.
That is about it for me. As we have gone over, Matt was gracious enough to allow me to come on the podcast a few times. And we had fun, or I had fun. And he gave me the opportunity to host the NXT podcast here on the unofficial WWE podcast. I say it every week. It's like a dream.
Unofficial.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Yeah. For legal reasons.
Oh, no. Like literally legal reasons. I was contacted. Yes. Yep.
Oh, yeah. Oh, were you really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like wow. It was many months ago. They contacted me saying you have to use unofficial and you got to take our logo out. I'm like, I get it. So No, it's a real thing. And I get it. I mean, it's trademarked. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
That makes sense. And I say it every week. It's a dream come true for me. I get to talk about wrestling each week. I usually go 40-45 minutes a week. It usually comes out Thursdays, usually in the afternoon, comes up a little bit earlier on Patreon. So for any of our podcasts with any of our fantastic hosts, if you could give it a listen, we're all on Twitter. You can hit us up if you'll, you know, rate and review the podcast. That helps a bunch. For me personally, I am Zach NXT. That's ZachNXT. On Twitter, any comments, questions, concerns, anything. I've gone back and forth with a few fans. Some of the questions have made it onto the show, but hit me up. Let me know what you think of Money in the Bank. Let me know what you think of what happened on NXT this week and what's going to happen next week, and I'll be glad to talk to you. Zach NXT, ZachNXT. I'd love to hear from you.
Very good. And, that's a hell of a Twitter handle. I was thinking that the other day. Like, it's very concise, and it's like, how did you get that? I mean, like, how did no one else think of that?
Right? Because it started as I gave you the wrong Twitter handle on here, thinking that my other handle for another social media website was correct, and it wasn't. And then I just went through the process of trying to change my username, and the first, like, four I tried were taken. And I don't know why ZachNXT wasn't taken, but I was lucky enough to jump in and get it.
Yeah, I saw that. I'm like, is he like with WWE? And I don't know. Like, so I mean,
don't worry
like,
about it, dude.
Yeah. You work in a grocery store.
Just
yeah.
Say unofficial, okay?
Yeah, just yeah, right. Yeah, you're a mole for WWE, right?
Worry about it, dude.
It's great to have you, Zach. Of course, stay safe. Enjoy the craziness of where you work. It's gonna be that way for, I don't know, many months to come, but hopefully not. So, Zach, thanks so much for popping on, and we will talk soon. And of course, everyone will be able to hear you again in just a few days. So,
yes, sir. Thank you very much for having me, Matt. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Zach. Hey, guys. Not because you need to, but because you would want to. Improve your weight room and bedroom performance with the all-new VasoFlux for Men. It's a natural dietary supplement. This unique blend of barks, roots, herbs, and vitamins is nature's way of keeping you in the game, and for under $10, you can order yours today. Just visit Youth Fountain Laboratory at youthfountainlab.com, that's youthfountainlab, all one word, .com, or call 1-800-853-7856, that's 1-800-853-7856.
Thanks for listening to the WWE Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss a show. Or head to WWEPodcast.com. And for all of these shows ad-free, head over to Patreon.com/WWE Podcast. Until then, we'll see you next time.